Elliot Friedman, brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe, your store for everything door and more. Installing doors for your business, glass doors, sliding doors, and handicap accessible doors, plus frames and hardware. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.
Elliot, let's get right to it. Dustin Byfuglien and the Jets agreeing on something, and that's they're going to go their separate ways.
Yes, I think we have to wait. I guess the earliest he can go on waivers is tomorrow at noon. Eastern, which is the only time that matters, of course, right, guys?
Absolutely.
Eastern, yeah.
But you can go on waivers tomorrow, but it looks like they're working on a similar type of situation as Kovalchuk in L.A. We heard on the weekend that it was likely going to be not playing this year and take a look at his future in the summer, and that looks like the case, although in a bit of a different way than maybe I expected on Saturday night. But I think that Buffalo, I don't think, wants to play for the Jets anymore. I think the Jets don't want him around anymore. The relationship, which was once very positive, has been fractured, and it's time to move on. And I think that's what both these sides are going to try to do. And I think it comes at a time that the Jets need it, because I think they're going to go and see what they can do at the deadline.
How'd we get here, Elliot? Like, how has it gotten to this point with such an important player on this team over the last number of years?
You know, I think that Byfuglien went away. I think last year was a really hard year. I know people have wondered if the concussions played into it in terms of the injuries. I mean, I don't want to discount that in any way, shape, or form, the seriousness potential of that injury. But the concussions were never mentioned to me. It was always the ankle. You know, he got hurt last year. He missed quite a bit of time. He came back. I don't think he was ever 100% healthy. He plays a lot of hockey. He agreed at the end of the year that he was healthy enough to play. But, you know, sometimes I think Byfuglien's the kind of guy, he's like, yeah, whatever. And then in the summer, I think he thought with time he would get better, and it just never did. And I think once he started skating again seriously at the end of the summer, beginning of the September, he's like, I don't want to do this. It's not fun. I'm not healthy. I'm not interested. And I think that really affected it. I think last year was a hard year, too, in Winnipeg. You know, it was they've talked openly about how they had to change the temperature, the approach around the team. And, I just think it all that sapped his desire to play. And I think the Jets were upset. I think initially the Jets really wanted to work with them because they had a good relationship with them and they considered them very important. I think as this continued, it really soured. I think the relationship between Byfuglien and the team was lost. And I think right now a divorce is the best thing, and I think we'll be curious to see in the summer, you know, who goes after him? Who says to him, if you want to resume, do you want to resume with us? Because I think there will be interest if he's willing to play.
So is there any threat of a claim here, or is this done with the purpose of him becoming a free agent and then finding a home this summer?
I guess there's always threat of a claim, but he's not going to play this year. So who's adding that cap hit this year?
Right.
Yeah, you'd have to be in a really unique situation.
I was told,
right?
On the weekend. Like, I found out about that story literally about 20 minutes before I reported on Saturday night. And so you're kind of rushing and you get as much confirmation as you can. But the one thing I was told was he hasn't started skating yet. So how can you see Dustin Byfuglien playing this year if he isn't skating yet?
Yeah, I would suggest the only way it would even make sense for anyone, A, you have to have the cap space, and B, you have to want Byfuglien next year, and this year is a write-off, right?
Yes, and there aren't a lot of teams like that.
What do the Jets do? Now they have this cap space. We know that they have been hurting on the blue line all year long. Do you expect Kevin Cheveldayoff to make a significant addition or two with all of a sudden a little more breathing room under the cap?
Well, I could see it. Like, the thing that says to me is, they're in the race. They've played hard. Like, the underlying numbers for the Jets are not great. And Hellebuck has been their best player for a lot of the year. But I think what that doesn't do them enough justice is how hard they've played. They've had a lot of excuses to quit on this year or not be as good. And I think I think the way they look at their players and coaching staff is that they have played really hard. And I think they would like to, if they can, to reward them by getting them some help. Now, this is a team 2 years ago at the deadline, they traded Stastny for Stastny and gave up a first-rounder. Last year at the deadline, they traded for Hayes and they gave up a first-rounder. I don't know if you can keep doing that. I mean, I have to see the deal, obviously. But I think more likely it's something maybe a bit smaller, or they feel they can improve their blue line. But I think they are going to look and see what's out there defensively.
Okay, let's move along. Jesperi Kotkaniemi is down to Laval of the American Hockey League. He went 3 overall to Montreal a few drafts ago. And how is that being reacted to in Montreal, where, you know, there was a Quinn Hughes and there were some other elite players, Brady Tkachuk on the board when they made that pick? And I guess just give us your thoughts on that situation.
Well, typically understated Canadian reaction, right?
Yeah.
You know, like it happens. Like I don't think this is the end of the world. I really don't. I don't believe this is the end of the world. I don't think it's the worst thing if a 19-year-old kid, a guy who was the youngest player in the NHL last year, needs a little bit of seasoning. Like, to me, it doesn't mean he's a flop or his career's over or anything like that. I think too often we look at the AHL as a negative. It's not necessarily a negative. A lot of good players have gotten better down there. I still think, to me, Quinn Hughes right now, he's the rookie of the year. You know, like he's an elite talent. I don't think there's any doubt about that. The Canadians, it's hard to find centers. Like, I get it. I remember when Arizona had the 3rd overall pick behind McDavid and Eichel, they got offered Dougie Hamilton from Boston. And Don Maloney decided not to do it. He drafted Dylan Strome. And the thing he said was, it's so hard to find centers in this league. And I think you just have to be patient. I really do. Like Arizona, that same draft, they took Hayton. And I know there have been lots of people looking at them and saying they were nuts for taking Hayton at that point. You know, you're not thinking they're so nuts after the World Juniors. It takes time. You need to see where we're going. I don't think this is the end of the world for Montreal.
Elliot Friedman's with us. Hockey Night in Canada, Mondays on Pinder and Steinberg. What can you tell us about Jesperi Kapanen and the situation in Toronto and how things all came to be with him sitting on Saturday?
Well, you know, I think Kapanen, you know, he's, like, he admitted it today. He slept in and he was late for practice on Friday. And so they sat him out on Saturday night. And the word on Saturday as that game was developing was it was a disciplinary incident, but nobody could confirm it at the time until after the game. And, I think the thing about Kapanen is he's got a little bit of that young wild man in him. Like, there is that there. He's a guy, he's clearly one of those guys who loves life, and he likes to take part in the fun stuff of it. And, you know, I think this, like, don't forget, it was a different situation. But this is a team that a few years ago suspended Nazem Kadri for 3 games. And that was their line in the sand with him. And they said, if you don't grow up, you're going to be gone. And, you know, I think, you know, there's a lot of trade rumors about Kapanen, and I think in the right deal, they would move him. And I also believe that him and Keefe, they're not huge fans of each other. I think they battled in at the American Hockey League level. They're obviously battling a little bit at the NHL level. In terms of overall style, you know, Kapanen's more of a north-south guy, and I think he fit in Babcock's system a lot more than he fits in Keefe's. But I will tell you this, like, when Kyle Dubas traded for Kapanen, people were down on him. He had a bad World Juniors that year. Pittsburgh was down on him. But Kyle Dubas believed in him, and Kyle Dubas is a fan. And I think he would trade him in the right deal, but I don't think this means he's necessarily gone. I think this is their, like, Kadri that changed his career for the better when they suspended him, and I think they're hoping this has the same kind of reaction.
What are you hearing, speaking of the Maple Leafs, what are you hearing on negotiations about Jake Muzzin's next deal and a potential contract extension there?
Well, I think they both are interested. I don't think there's a lack of interest here. I think it is, can they do it? You know, the Maple Leafs obviously have a cap situation. Muzzin would like to stay, but I think the big question is going to be term. You know, I think the Leafs are willing to do all of the things that they like to do. They'll pay him bonuses. They'll front load his contract. They'll do all that stuff. But he's got to take less of an AAV, and he probably has to take less term. Like, I could see Toronto not wanting to go past 3 years. I think it's very possible that they'd prefer not to go to three, and maybe in the most extreme of situations would want, or in preferable situations to them, they'd go to four. But I think it's going to be hard. Like, Muzzin could undoubtedly get a better deal somewhere else, barring the structure, maybe. So I think that he's going to have to decide, is he willing to do that? I think they want to stay. I think they want him. I think he wants them. But I think he knows, in terms of overall dollars and term, he could probably do something better somewhere else.
Contract negotiations have begun. Chats have started between Vancouver and Jacob Markstrom.
Yeah, but I don't know how well they've gone. Like, Chris Johnston reported on Saturday that the talk was they'd offered him a 2-year deal, and I'd heard a similar rumor. Like, when you look at it, Koskinen's deal in Edmonton was 3 years at, what, 4.5? And when Arizona extended Kemper, it was kind of based on that deal, 2 years at 4.5. So I think Vancouver, it sounds like that was their model. And I just don't think that that's where Markstrom is willing to go, at least at this point. You know, it's a tough time for Vancouver because, like, that market, they're insatiable for this kind of stuff. Like, we all talk about our contracts and our trades and everything like that, but they're the biggest one. And, you know, they're going really well. They won, what, 14 of 17 or something like that? Mm-hmm. And the two of the biggest stories are Markstrom's contract and Judd Brackett, the amateur scout's contract. And I think they're trying to keep that. They don't want that to derail what the problem for them. I don't think it's...
Elliot Friedman joining us Mondays here on Pinder and Steinberg. It's funny you mentioned Kemper's contract. I mean, Markstrom's coming off a couple really quality years. He's 30. He's certainly not Sergei Bobrovsky, but would his money not be closer to a 10 than, say, a 2 or a 3?
Sorry, what's that, sorry?
Just what would your AAV guess be on Markstrom? I mean, he's had two really good years, in my opinion.
Well, Bobrovsky was a unique case. He's not getting... I mean, Markstrom's not getting the $10 million. I mean, right. Bobrovsky had won a Vezina. You know, until last year... Yeah, two of them. I mean, until last year, where he kind of wasn't himself for a while, and I think the contract was... and the free agency was... His relationship with Columbus seemed to be fractured. You know, like, it was, you know, he was a consistently top goalie. Markstrom is a late bloomer, and he looks like he looks great, but he just didn't have the history. So I don't think you can really compare them. But, like, I would bet Markstrom was hoping for something that started with a 6 and probably more term than 2 years. I mean, it's tough. Like, you know, goalies are voodoo, and there's a lot of people that don't agree that you should give them term. But, you know, it's always easy when it's not your guy or the guy who's kind of your MVP, right? And, you know, I'm careful about expected goal models. And, again, I don't like to throw shade at people who are doing great work out there. But some of the teams who really have more data than we do, they believe that the expected goal stuff out there is not as detailed as what they have available, so they warned me to be careful.
But if you look at Markstrom and some of those public models out there, his numbers are really good. So he's coming. I mean, there's a lot of conflicting opinions there. He's their guy. They know him the best. I understand why they're going with short term. I just don't know if that's going to work.
Yeah, and then, of course, the backdrop is they have Demko and DiPietro in the system. And then you look at that free agent class. You've got, obviously, Robin Leonard out there and a couple other intrigue names. Like, there's a lot for to get through on both sides of this thing.
Well, I think the other thing, too, Ryan, is there's as people have pointed out to me, it's not only the starters who are available. There's, like, good 1A or 1B options available. Like, there's Halak if he doesn't re-sign. There's Greiss if he doesn't re-sign. There's Khudobin if he doesn't re-sign. Those are good 1B options. Those are guys who can play 25 to 40 or more games for you. So, you know, I think that's the thing, is that there's a lot of options. But, you know, the one thing I always think is, like, Vancouver knows that guy better than anybody else. And, you know, I just think that he's been so good for them this year. He's caught, his leverage is at its best at the right time, and his leverage might best be there than anywhere else.
Okay, now you have to tell us, 2 days removed, how much fun you had watching that Flames Oilers game on Saturday.
You know what the number one question I got about Calgary before that game?
What?
We did that podcast last week with Tree Living. I can't tell you how many guys texted me and asked, who got the 8 for Calgary? Like the score of 8 in the analytics they do. And so True Living wouldn't tell me on or off the record. He's like, I'm not telling you that. And people didn't believe me. They were like, he told you. And I go, no, he wouldn't tell me. And so that was before the weekend. But then after the game, look, everybody listening to this interview, you're a Flames fan or you're a hockey fan, but you care, right? Like, you want to see your Flames do well, and you just want to know the players care about it as much as you do. And, like, that's a night where you realize that, A, God, I wish there were more games with that passion, and B, you know, they do care. And the Edmonton games, when both teams are good, are as meaningful to those players as they are to you. And that's important. I mean, we're all more careful about fighting now because of what we know. But, geez, if more games had that kind of passion, the league would almost have no problems.
How are these games being digested by the rest of the league from who you've talked to?
People loved it. Like, I don't know anybody who didn't like that. I'm not a guy who watches trends on Twitter, but I know obviously people who work in social media, they do. Like, people were buzzing that night. Like, when the word got out that the goalies were fighting, you know, people got into it. Like, they were all, like, they loved it. We taped an interview with Keith Yandle yesterday, and Keith Yandle, obviously he played in Arizona with Mike Smith. And, like, he said right after the game, he was texting Mike Smith, like, you wanted that, didn't you? It's like everybody's talking about it, and people love it. You know, you just want to know if you're invested in watching a game that there's reason to, that the players and everyone are as invested as you are. And, poof, they certainly were.
Final one for you. 3 weeks today, the NHL's trade deadline. Anything close or any hot spots to watch? This is going to be the every time you get interviewed, you're going to get asked this now. Get ready.
Well, you know, I don't know if there's any particular hot spots to watch. I mean, you know, Kreider got hurt the other night, and he's going to play tonight against Dallas. So I think everybody will be watching to see how he is. That's a big one. You know what? I think that's probably what everyone's going to be watching tonight. You know, other than that, I'm not sure that there's anything really too huge that jumps out of me as of today. You know, I think we know who the teams are out there. I think we know that a bunch of teams are kind of waiting to see what happens. But I think a lot of eyes will be on Kreider tonight to see, just to make sure he's healthy.
Thanks as always. We'll chat again next week.
Thanks, Elliot.
All right, guys. Take care.